Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring 5 doctors of audiology, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. A political newcomer has announced a run for mayor of Bloomington. He's 29-year-old Nick McClintock. McClintock is a radio technician for the Illinois Farm Bureau. He has also been a part-time producer and show host for various radio stations in Bloomington Normal.
I'm running because I'm fairly young and a lifelong resident, and I feel like, based on, you know, being in radio, the number of council meetings I covered and things like that, I think that's a voice that's kind of missing from Bloomington politics. I mean, there's a little bit of youth on the council now, but I think that the voice for the person who works a regular 9-to-5, who's a, you know, just starting their careers, I feel like that's missing from Bloomington politics, and I'd like to convey those opinions to people in the discussion as a whole.
If elected, what are the most pressing problems facing the city?
I would say that the most pressing problem is definitely, continuing to fix our roads, making sure, and I know that I'm blanking on the timeline on that, but I know that a couple years ago they kind of unveiled that timeline for fixing roads here in town, you know, the urgency that was needed for them, and I think that we need to review that, maybe make some changes to it, make sure that we're doing that as efficiently, quickly, and safely as possible. And then after that, make sure that our city finances get stabilized. I love what, previous mayors have done. I love what Terry Renner has done as far as improvements to quality of life around town. But I feel like we need to, maybe especially with current financial and economic times, we need to maybe take a step back, look at those things, and make sure that they're really what's pressing for the city.
The job of mayor requires a significant input of hours at all times of day and night. Since you have a 9-to-5, how would you do that?
That's something that I thought a lot about before I thought about the decision. First off, being able to trust in the council and the city manager, being able to delegate tasks. At the salary level the Bloomington mayor position is, I would have to, of course, have to put food on the table for my family and keep working. But I think that I will be able to transition into both being able to keep my 9-to-5, maybe with a little bit of adjusted hours, and then, of course, being able to meet the needs for what the mayor position needs.
What's your history of involvement in the community in terms of volunteerism and engagement with various community organizations?
I would say that most people, if they've heard my name or seen me around, it would just be from my time with WJBC, covering events and getting the word out and informing the community has really been, I would say, my way that I've been able to help those different entities out. That's something that I've always prided myself on, being able to deliver news and inform people to make sure that they know what's going on in the community, and then, of course, interviewing people like you're doing right now to get the word out and make sure people stay informed.
Historically, most candidates for mayor have had long involvement with one or several community organizations and have various leadership posts to gain a base and to prove to the community that they have leadership qualities. I'm not hearing that from you, but make the case for leadership and you.
My leadership would stem from how I've been brought up, raised, No, you're absolutely right. I haven't held a necessarily leadership post in community groups or anything like that. But being able to be trusted to come in at 2 a.m. during a severe thunderstorm warning at WJBC to inform communities that a severe storm is on the way, I feel is that that's one definition of how people can trust me. I've always tried my hardest to keep my finger on the pulse of the community, maybe not necessarily up front, but at least behind, and keep myself educated and informed. And I just feel that I've been kind of a background person, in my life and in the community, but I'm ready to kind of step out and
The job of mayor is certainly as foreground as it gets. Why start with mayor and not with a board or commission that you could be appointed to, or with a city council role where you can sort of acquire some leadership chops?
It's a valid question. I just feel that at this point, whenever whenever Mayor Renner announced his bid, that he wasn't going to seek re-election, that was a time for me. I've been considering some type of run in politics for a while, again, in the background, but I just feel that now is the time.
Nick McClintock says in moderating disputes between various stakeholders in the community, it's important to tune out the fringe sides of issues. He says he looks for the middle. The other announced candidate in the Bloomington mayoral race is Michael Straza. Current Mayor Terry Renner says he will not run for a third term. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington Normal schools are desperate for substitute teachers as they bring students back into the classroom part-time. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel tells Dana Vollmer the sub-shortage is a longstanding issue, but COVID-19 is not helping.
Really, for years, schools across Illinois have had a sub-shortage. And so last year, the school district started looking at, what are ways that we can increase the amount of subs available on any given day. And so, the district looked into Kelly Education and some other companies. And in fact, two of the main companies that they looked at merged and now formed Kelly Education. And so the benefit to using an outsource like that is that they can definitely dedicate all of their time and attention to recruiting, to training, while still giving the school district control of saying, yes, we want this person to sub in our buildings, no, we don't. And so, we are still investigating that to see if it would be the right fit for Unit 5. In regards to subbing, like on a typical day, we might need anywhere from 60 to 70 subs, during different times of year, whether it be during flu season or, back to school when maybe some of our employees are taking their kids to college. Those rates may increase, on certain days and times of the year.
And so you mentioned that the need for subs has always been kind of a strain on Illinois school districts. Has that been heightened by the pandemic in terms of subs maybe not wanting to go into a classroom right now due to the risks?
Yes, I would say that's fair. We have over 200 subs that either fill in for teachers or paraprofessionals or admin assistants or EOPs. And at the beginning of the school year, our HR department called everybody and asked, are you still able and willing to sub, even during COVID? And, for some of those subs, they felt like, no, they're in a high-risk category, so they just didn't feel comfortable committing to that. And others had at that time indicated yes. And so naturally, people might change their mind or opinion. And on days that we can't find subs, if we have a certified teacher assistant, they may help cover. And even as recent as this week, we've had building administrators step in and serve as subs.
Talk a bit more about how dire that shortage is. Are we looking at a situation where it threatens the district's ability to operate?
Absolutely. And I hate to say that, but if we don't have, coverage, sub-coverage, it may impact our ability to stay open. And, that's a pretty serious statement, and I realize that. I've been putting out a plea and encouraging people to consider signing up to be a sub, because we definitely need substitute teachers. There is actually a short-term kind of modification in the sub-coverage that we can have someone who hasn't maybe traditionally went through the regular substitute teacher process, but if they meet our criteria, pass a background check, fingerprinting, that they could be like a supervisor in the classroom while our teacher might be teaching from home remotely and providing that core instruction. So that's even a new opportunity that would be available to parents, community members who might be interested.
What are the qualifications for becoming a sub?
A traditional teacher substitute needs to have a bachelor's degree and apply to be a sub through the Regional Office of Education. About a year and a half ago, there was an opportunity for a short-term emergency approval, so anyone with 60 college hours or an associate's degree could apply to have a short-term substitute license. And once they, you know, part of that application process is having a background check, fingerprinting, and then they would receive some training prior to coming into our buildings.
What happens to your ability to hold classes if you're relying on a service like Kelly Education and still not getting the substitute teachers that you need?
It would fall back to what we're currently doing. So at the elementary level, if we can't find a sub, you know, many times if we have a certified paraprofessional or TA in the building, we might have to pull them from their assignment and have them help cover a classroom, and or our building administrators are stepping in to cover. At the junior high school level, our default is, you know, we may have to have teachers cover another classroom during their planning period. So we're kind of piecemealing sub coverage. And or, again, the building administrators are stepping in like they did this week to fill in and be the sub.
That's Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel talking to Dana Vollmer. Weichel adds teachers need to isolate after they've been in close contact with a COVID-positive person, which increases the need for subs. You're listening to 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Democrat George Petrilli says the way the 18th Congressional District is carved up makes it too safe for a Republican to win, and that means there is never an opportunity to really talk about the issues. He's trying anyway. Petrilli has challenged Republican incumbent Darren LaHood this fall in a district that includes parts of Peoria, Bloomington Normal, and Springfield. LaHood didn't respond to repeated requests for an interview or to join a WGLT candidates forum with Petrilli. Petrilli tells Ryan Denham he's a Springfield native and lawyer who only became the Democratic choice on the ballot over the summer.
I think Central Illinois is a lot like a lot of different areas of the country where we have some small cities and rural areas. And a lot of the issues that are going on with rural areas right now with healthcare and lack of economic opportunities, you're starting to see what is middle and small town America not be able to be, in anymore, it's not able to survive. Economically, you see people that grow up in those areas need to leave when they go to college or to seek job opportunities. They can't really come back because there's not a lot of economic opportunity there, any growth or any opportunity for growth. And the government is not initiating policies that allow for growth to be sustainable in small and rural areas. Some of the trade issues and policies that we see have driven small and family-owned farms, they start to become less and less sufficient for the long term. So you have families that can't have or can't rely anymore on multi-generational practice of their farming.
So what's an example of where federal policymaking has come up short for rural parts of the 18th district?
Sure, and I think it stretches several different areas. The first one that I think we should address is healthcare. Healthcare for people right now is, I think, is a bottleneck on the economy. People that want to go, want to build businesses, expand businesses, start businesses, people that want to change jobs, to change careers, are really held back by the idea of losing healthcare or losing coverage on pre-existing conditions for themselves or for their family. That question of whether or not I should change my job, get a new job, expand my business because of healthcare costs is a real drag on the economy, especially in areas of Central Illinois, small rural areas, small cities, where you don't have a very expansive market to go into for jobs. So, you know, large cities, Chicago, St. Louis, New York, Los Angeles, you have a larger market where you can go and you can compete for jobs and compete for packages that include benefits. But in smaller areas, you might be stuck in a job. You may be, get a state job and you may want to start a business, but you don't feel like you can because you have to have that insurance. That insurance is your lifeline. And I don't think we should have insurance tied to a job. I don't think we should have insurance tied to your income. I think we need to have insurance that is a guaranteed right for people. And I believe that it is.
Does that mean that you support then a single payer model, a universal healthcare?
I am, but not immediately because of the way that our, so initially what I'll state is that I don't believe for-profit healthcare system works at all. I don't believe it has a place in our economy and it should not. And I've stated this before that I believe anybody that says that it's a good model or that it's a working model or somehow is a better model is either misinformed or they're misinforming others. They're either lying or they don't know what they're really stating, because the design of a model for profit for healthcare. And so I have an economics degree and I believe in our capitalist economic system and what that can do as far as competition for growth, for development of new technologies. All of that is wonderful, but the healthcare system is not a place where we need to have capitalistic determination on market qualities. And by that, I mean, you can see it in rural areas. You can go to low income areas and you can see the level of care is not the same and it will never be the same because those areas are never going to be as profitable. So you are going to see a minimal amount of effort, a minimal amount of care, and it's going to continue to reduce. And anybody in a rural area that's been sick, how long does it take to get to a doctor? How far away is the hospital?
Student loan debt is something that you've talked a lot about. What is your vision of a way forward there to bring that debt load under control?
Student loan debt is not secured by a piece of real estate. So even if it had less value, that real estate can't transfer hands. You can't transfer your college degree. So we have this massive debt issue that's coming up. And also with that, we see students that move back home, that take jobs just to pay their student loan debt or take jobs in government so that they think they might be able to forgive the rest of that loan in 10 years. And we've seen that rate of student loan forgiveness in public service. The rejection rate is actually in the 90s, which is somewhat absurd, which needs to be investigated itself. But I presented a program a number of years ago through the ISBA, and that just specifically with lawyers, that would allow attorneys to, and this could, what I want to do is expand this, the whole concept out to anybody that has a student loan debt, to be able to make their monthly payment with pro bono and social service work. And so for attorneys, the way that would work, traditionally, you can have an appointed attorney in a criminal matter, and you're constitutionally allowed to that, but not for a civil matter. So if somebody sees a social injustice or suffers one, as of right now, they can't afford an attorney or they can't find an attorney who feels like it's worthwhile to put money into on a contingent basis. They don't have access essentially to the legal system. They don't have representation that's willing to do that for them. And I think if we empower people to work for the community, to work for people directly by essentially making investments in the community, by allowing people to pay student loan debt through that type of work. And functionally how that would work is you would have probably just designated 501c3s within desired areas that worked in the community or provided a service. Another example being of teachers. If they wanted to tutor after school at-risk children or children that were falling behind or they knew weren't getting the education they needed or they weren't catching on to concepts, you could allow them to tutor, have the principal write off on the number of hours they did on what student that student qualified, and they could submit that as payment for their student loan for that month. And again, as the economy's declined, we're going to see the recourse of this, of less and less and less money for social service programs. And people that are at risk, this cycle of poverty that continues is going to be even worse and worse and worse. If you see some of the worst school districts in the country have some of the most money spent per student. So money necessarily isn't the issue, but I think getting people that are skilled, that are talented, that are educated, and motivate them to basically give services to the community that are badly needed.
The incumbent in the 18th district is Darren LaHood, a Republican. What do you make of his tenure so far in Congress?
I think there's different approaches to representation for elected officials. And I would almost boil them down to sort of passive representation and active representation. And that's the issues that I have with Congressman LaHood. I just don't think he's active. I think if anybody goes and looks up his record congressionally, he's presented very few, if any, of his own initiatives. I don't hear him talk about anything as far as how to solve any problems. And in fact, some of the mailers that people have showed me that he doesn't even want to identify that they're problems. I mean, to talk about, we can get a little bit more into it, but to say that systematic racism is only a question of whether you support Black Lives Matter or the police is not identifying what's going on in our society. It's an absolute refusal to do it. And I know when you get into congressional campaigns, when we try to get reelected, it's probably easier to simplify things, to figure out where the division is, figure out who's on what side, figure out what votes you can have, and just go with it. And that's what I think a lot of people do in Congress. And that's not something I do.
You talk a lot about gerrymandering. Do you think that the way the 18th congressional district has been gerrymandered, you know, it's sprawling from Bloomington Normal to parts of Peoria to Springfield to Lincoln all the way west toward Macomb. Do you think that gerrymandering has done a disservice to voters?
Absolutely. And that's sort of exactly what I was saying on that is when you have a party, essentially one party or the other, that knows that they can always win a district, you're never going to get the full attention of that elected official on what the specific issues are because they have no motivation to do so. And again, when you're also seeking support financially from corporations that don't have that interest at heart, it goes the same way. You're not going to have any motivation to try to solve those actual problems if trying to solve those problems may mean that you're going to lose a few votes. I believe when it's set up that way, and I don't have specific ways to fix it, but again, I think if you don't identify that it's a problem, we're never going to be able to come up with ways to fix that. And it's a problem all over America. And you see, I mean, there probably shouldn't be congressmen. I don't know. I mean, I've talked about the idea of limiting the term limits, but we have that with people that can, you know, we can vote people out. So I don't know necessarily wouldn't say that term limits are the fix, because all you, to me, all you get is somebody else of that party, of that persuasion, of that group of people in that area, and rotating people in and out with the same perspective is not going to move forward anything. So just saying, and again, that leans back on when people want real simple fixes for complex problems. You can't just say, we need term limits, that's going to fix any problems that gerrymandering is causing, because it's not that simple of an issue. So I just say, I recognize that it is, and it absolutely is doing a disservice. And to say that it's not is, you're either self-involved with it or you're not really seeing the context of how it does affect the district and the people there.
Georgia, I think it's safe to say that you are the underdog in this race. This is not perceived to be a very competitive race here in the 18th district. You know, given that reality, what is it that you hope to accomplish here by making a run?
Well, so when I see all these problems not being addressed and not even being identified as problems, somebody needs to speak up on it. So even not being successful in the election in a traditional way by having more votes than the other person, I consider this successful just by the fact of identifying these problems and saying, we need to solve these. We need to help fix these. And for the people that feel frustrated and alienated, to show them that there are people out there that know that this is a problem, that we can fix these problems as long as we actually make it a point to say that they are there.
That's 18th Congressional District Democratic candidate George Petrilli with Ryan Denham. Find more of that interview at WGLT.org. Hear more political coverage all this week during the run-up to next week's election. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker.